This is Let's Talk MS, the podcast of youth living with MS.
Let's Talk MS!
Welcome to Let's Talk MS, a podcast series created by Young Minds for Young Minds and proudly brought to you by the European Multiple Sclerosis Platform. I'm Anna.
And I'm Elizabeth.
And we'll be your host for today.
In this podcast series, we're about to unpack the challenges of living life as a young adult while navigating the challenges that come with multiple sclerosis, MS, and related conditions, from dating to nutrition to dealing with the MS stigma. We're here to navigate it all through expert insight and personal stories.
First and foremost, let us welcome you all back to school or back to work to everyone. Exciting new year, new achievements and adventures await. It is a pleasure to bring to you this very special episode dedicated to children living with MS and related conditions, as well as their parents, caregivers and educators. Your strength, care and dedication make all the difference. Today, we will talk about pediatric MS, and we are hosting two special guests, Emily Blosberg, founder of the NGO Oscar the Monkey. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you very much.
And Eleanor Kitson, Young People's Network member from the UK, a graphic designer and diagnosed with MS at the age of 15. Welcome, Eleanor.
Thank you so much.
In this episode today, we will explore what it really means to grow up with an unexpected plot twist when a child is diagnosed with MS, the challenges they face and the emotional and practical impact it has on the entire family, friends, and everyone around. Pediatric MS refers to MS with onset before the age of 18. It is a rare form of MS, and it can have a significant impact on both physical and cognitive development. The long-term prognosis for children with MS is still being studied, but early diagnosis and treatments are believed to be crucial for minimizing long-term disability. So we will start our discussion around the diagnosis of children with MS. And how is it that the pediatric MS differs so much from the adult MS in terms of symptoms or detection, what it means and how it is diagnosed? And I will turn first maybe my questions to you, Emily. So you have been here in this organization for a long time. Can you explain to us a little bit what's the difference between the pediatric MS and the adult MS? And what are the early warning signs that parents should be aware of?
Great question. So I want to start by saying I'm actually not a medical professional. So these are all just my own experience, and as well as the stories that I've heard from the patients that I work with. A lot of the big differences between pediatric and adult actually come in the lifestyle changes that happen after a diagnosis. There's a lot of challenges that students face in the school as they're navigating how to deal with their symptoms, but then also balance being in school. That is a huge challenge, and navigating the symptoms that come up, like fatigue, being really tired, having headaches, not having enough energy to participate in all of the classes. But going back to the symptoms, I'll speak on my own experience. My symptoms started with numbness and tingling in my fingertips, which spread to my entire body. And I lost the ability to walk for a little while. I lost the ability to see for a little while. But that all came back with proper physical and occupational therapy. And some of the warning signs I guess parents could look for is just really the biggest thing is trust your kid. If your kid says that something isn't right, listen to them and take them seriously. It's kind of hard to do sometimes with kids and teenagers, but they know their bodies. And if they say something's not right, take them to the doctor and try to see what's going on.
Well, that's a good point, because often we doubt the kids, or we just underestimate what they're saying, and we just like, oh, it's good, go away. We just have a tendency to wipe it away. But it's true that we have to pay attention to what the kids are saying, and it's very important. And we know that even for like an adult, it's difficult to deal with the symptoms and understand what's going on, because MS is a very complex disease. So for children, it's even more complex. But something that with your organization also, now that I remember also what you told me years ago, I was wondering, maybe you can explain a little bit how you use also the Oscar the Monkey also to help the dialogue with the healthcare professionals, or explain the symptoms and how we can help the younger to express themselves.
Absolutely. So we created what's called Oscar the MS Monkey, which is our organization. But Oscar himself is a sock monkey. He is a stuffed animal made out of socks. And I initially created Oscar as a way of sharing my own story because I used to love to knit. I still love to knit, but I lost that ability for a little while as the yarn running on my fingers was very painful. But I had to keep doing something with my hands because I am such a crafty person that I started making these sock monkeys. And then I used Oscar, the big orange monkey, to kind of tell my story in that way. But then people started asking if they could have Oscar, and I said, no, he's mine. And so I started making smaller versions of Oscar and sending those to children who have been diagnosed with MS or a related disease all around the world. And we make them able to go into the MRI machine, so they don't have any plastic or metal. They're just fabric. And a lot of the kids will end up bringing their sock monkeys into the MRI with them or going to their doctor appointments. And some of the kids will even use their sock monkey to describe how they're feeling. You know, my sock monkey's arm feels really weak today. Or my sock monkey is so tired that I need to stay at home from school and take care of him. Or they'll bring him to doctor appointments and say, my sock monkey's foot feels tingly. And so they use this sock monkey to describe their symptoms so that it takes that pressure off of the child themselves, and they're putting that pressure on the sock monkey. Kind of a creative way of helping kids open up to their doctors.
And in terms of the other way around for the parents, maybe talking about your experience, but also in general, how the families are supported when there is a diagnosis with the MS, and what kind of resources do they receive and do you think they should receive to help them through the process?
That's a great question. I think a lot of it also depends on the family's location. I personally am located in the United States, and some of the things that a family can receive as resources come from nonprofit organizations such as Oscar, but also organizations that are more broadly known, the National MS Society, the MS Foundation, MS Views and News. There are a lot of education resources available for MS in general, and there are more and more resources becoming available specifically related to pediatric MS. In terms of going to school, some of the accommodations that students in the United States can receive, it's something called an IEP, or an Individualized Education Plan, or a 504. And those are two different documents that can be created that teachers have to legally follow by providing the accommodations for that student. And some of the accommodations could be lowering the amount of lights in a classroom to reduce the amount of stimulation that's coming from up above. Or a student could receive a pass to use the elevator as they go between classes. Some students might be able to turn their assignments late, not receive any sort of a penalty because they needed that energy in order to get through class, so they didn't have the time to finish their assignment. They can turn it in late. Other resources that families in general can receive, I think the biggest one is a community of support from each other. There are different Facebook groups that parents can join and families can join. There's one through us, through Mr. Oscar Monkey, but there's also another one that is specific for parents. It's called the Pediatric MS Alliance. And we both kind of serve in the same way of providing that community and having a place for the parents to meet each other and share their experience and give advice to each other, as long as it's not medical advice, of course.
Thanks for sharing. Now that we have already recorded some episodes, I realize that community is always there, and that in all the episodes, community is highlighted as something really important for this MS journey. But now, Eleanor, turning to you, how was your MS diagnosis? Which were the first symptoms that you had?
My first symptom was actually I went blind in my left eye and got diagnosed as optic neuritis. And they said there was a 45% chance of me getting MS later in life. Cut that 5 months. I got diagnosed with MS. I was also very fatigued. And I got told by the doctors multiple times, she's a teenager, what do you expect? So it was kind of having that support from my family. My mum is really good at fighting my corner when I'm not very well. And she was like, no, it's not normal for a teenager to sleep for 14 hours. Like, this is not normal. And they kept saying, no, it's fine. Give me iron tablets. It'll fix it. No. But then thought I was unfit. No, it was just because I had MS. But it took us many hospital visits, many travels to the doctors, time off school for a diagnosis. I think it took about a year for me to fully get a diagnosis. But without the support of my family and my friends, I don't think I could have gone through it. And even now, like, I have a lot of support of my family and my friends, people I've met since then, since uni. Like, I've met so many people. And even them, like, they're like, how can I learn more about it? They're reading about the communities, they're joining the communities, they're joining and they're reading things about how to understand me. Because as you say, like, you can get so overstimulated and it's quite hard for someone, an outsider, to understand.
That's great that you have this support around you, and it's super important. But I feel super shocked when I hear, like, stories like yours that doctors don't believe the symptoms of a teenager just for the age. How did you feel at that time when you were not believed?
At that point, I feel like I think I was 14 at that time when I was just going through that point. I didn't really acknowledge it because for me, that was normal. Whereas, like, I didn't know that sleeping 14 hours wasn't normal. So I didn't see it as an issue because I didn't actually acknowledge that. I just thought it's normal to sleep this long because obviously you're growing up, you're learning your body yourself. You've never felt these things. So how are you supposed to know? It was actually my mum that was like, you're sleeping a bit long now. After school, I'd literally go home, fall asleep and literally wake up the next day to go back to school. I was absolutely knackered. And it was actually my parents that were like, this is not normal. And then after a few times, the doctors, I were like, to be fair, none of my friends are feeling like this. Why are none of my friends feeling like this? But I am. We're doing the same things. I was very into sport at school. So I was like, maybe it's because I'm doing lots of sport and activities. It was like, mum, no, it's not normal for you to be this tired. So luckily, because I didn't actually acknowledge it, because you wouldn't, as a 14-year-old, you wouldn't know what's normal. My mum actually acknowledged the fact that I was sleeping a lot more than I probably should have. And the first thing that really hit me was going blind. I started seeing like little colours in my eye. I think it was my left eye. And I just kept saying, I can't see. Like, I literally can't see the board at school. I couldn't see anything. And then eventually they took me seriously, gave me some medication, and then it basically just went. It took a while to recover fully, but now other than my glasses, I can see. But it just took that time for people to understand you. And for the fact that my family and friends can understand me more than a doctor who just kind of brushes it off.
I had such a similar situation as you were sharing your story. One of the doctors told me that the reason that my vision was going and that I was feeling so numb and tingly was because I wasn't getting enough oxygen and I should just breathe into a paper bag. He literally handed me a paper bag and said, breathe into this. And my mom called. I was 14 as well. My mom called the on-call doctor after we got home and said, I'd like to bring her to a hospital. Where should we go? And the person on the phone said, well, take her to this hospital because that's where the doctor is that you just saw. And we said, great, we're going to go to a different hospital. We're not going to that one.
I don't know if you found it as well. I got a lot of MS hug. But at the time, I didn't know what that was. So I went to hospital in an ambulance thinking I couldn't breathe, thinking that I was having some sort of, like, it was my lungs. And actually now, obviously, it's MS hug. And that was another thing they kind of brushed off. It was like, she's got asthma. No, I'm not. I'm absolutely fine. I'm fit and healthy. But why can't I all of a sudden just randomly start just not being able to breathe?
I get the MS hug as chest pain. And so I get my heart tested all the time because the doctors hear that I have chest pain. And they say, we need to make sure your heart is okay. And I go, no, it's just my MS hug.
You know, there are so many conditions. When will you come in front of a professional? If they don't have a little bit of background, they will go for the most obvious or the common diseases. And it's very important that we can help people to open their minds also, and that there is more awareness that will help them to keep an eye on uncommon diseases, even if the symptoms are quite the same. So it's very, very important to keep an eye on this, for the parents to be supportive enough to keep a diary if needed. The very very beginning when there are these symptoms that appears, to be able to explain that in a good way, but also to help the children to express themselves. That's really, really important. Maybe we're talking about the people around the kids at this point. What are the biggest emotional, financial burdens that the parents are facing when children are diagnosed with MS? Have you heard stories about how challenging it is and how the parents are dealing with those burdens?
Yeah, some of the challenges that definitely come up are financial challenges. There are a lot of medical bills that are associated with pediatric MS. And there's that sense of loneliness. And that's where we come back to that, having that community of support. Going through the MS journey and the diagnosis journey can be a very, very lonely thing. And especially when you just don't know what you're facing. And to be able to have a community that says, I am standing with you, I understand. But then also to learn to be a strong advocate for yourself and for your child. You know your child knows themselves. And so when you're at an appointment or you're at school or you're with your friends or family, when people don't understand what it is that your family, your child is going through, speak up and help them understand. Because if you don't educate, then they're not going to know how to help you.
Yeah, true. That's a very important message. I think, Eleanor, you wanted to switch. So what are the biggest emotional and financial challenges, that burden that the parents are facing when a child is diagnosed with MS?
I think for me, it was more of getting that support. So I couldn't, during my GCSEs, I was given half days so I could come to school half days. But that meant I missed my maths lessons. So then I had to get a maths tutor. So we had to pay that ourselves and we had to pay for the maths tutor. But if I didn't do that, I would have been really ill and I probably would have failed my exams. But because I had that flexibility from school, but then also it is fine, like my parents had to pay for these tutors. And then also luckily I've got a really supportive family, as I said. So my granddad did all the running around. Whereas if you've not got that, it is quite strenuous on financially just going from school to home, school to your tutor, and it can impact you financially.
That's very true, that our education systems are not fit for kids that need special requirements. Often, and I'm not going to say that in general, often the school systems are not equipped, not only because they're not aware of, but also because the structure itself does not allow some flexibility. And that adds to the financial or the burden on the caregiver, the parents that needs to compensate that. The lack of flexibility in the work on the school hours, the lack of flexibility to be able to catch up courses if you miss them and so on, is the parents need to compensate. If not, we often see also that the kids are dropping out of the school system and they then become also impaired in a way that they can't work or find employment and so on and so on. So it's a long-term impact that we see for when the systems are not equipped. What's the difference between caregiving for an adult and caregiving for a child? What do you think would be the main recommendations we can make for the parents?
So I found a massive difference in how I'm treated as an adult compared to treated as a child. When I go to an appointment as a child, they spoke to my mom, whereas as an adult, they speak to me. And that changeover, every time I got asked a question by the doctor, I just look at my mum and hope that she answers it. And it's kind of having that independence as you get older and you start making the choices. It's like when you're younger, your mum will be like, she needs to go to hospital. We need to take her to hospital. Whereas as you get older, you start to say, I need to go to hospital. You start having that voice and be feeling that comfortable to speak about your pain. Also, you've got to think about things at work. Like if you don't sort it out now, it will impact work longer. And you have more things on your mind, not just yourself. When you have kids and things like that, there's not just you in the picture and you're not just having your parents look after you. Whereas as you get older, you are got more things to think about.
And maybe a question for Emilia, do you think there are resources that can help the children to transition into their adult life with a chronic condition?
Yes. So there are tools that we have created through our organization that help with that transition. We have a physical journal that helps the teenagers learn how to have the loudest voice in their healthcare team. and how to kind of let mom and dad take a step back at their appointments. So yes, there are a lot of tools that are being developed in the MS world to help with that transition. There are a lot of research studies taking place to learn how clinicians can help navigate that transition.
Do you think that those tools and resources that exist are developed together with children? Are they co-designing those tools? And what would be, if, because we also see a lot of resources for people with MS, and sometimes we see that they are not fit for purpose because they were created or designed without their input. And how do you see that? Are children consulted and in designing those tools and resources?
Yeah, so I can actually only speak on the one that I have been working on for our own organization. I don't have the clearance to talk about others who are working on their projects. But the one that we have developed, we created it with the teenagers. So we specifically asked them, what would you like to have as a resource available to you to help with your transition into adulthood? And some of the things that we have include a template for being prepared for an appointment. We have an area for the child to write down their questions, and then the parents can write down their questions after the child's questions have been answered. There's a place for them to take notes as they're in their appointment, listening to and talking to their doctor. But then there are also things about if they've questioned if they're experiencing a new symptom. What do I do if I have a new symptom that comes up and I'm not at my doctor appointment? You know, how do I reach out to my doctor? What is my doctor's phone number? How do I reach them through an online communication? So we've developed this tool, Elizabeth, as you said, specifically listening to the teenagers and asking them to help us create it to help other teenagers in the future.
It's great that this tool is co-designed also by teenagers, that it's not only the organization designing the tool, that they can also have their voice and think that's a really good tool, but not only for teenagers, sometimes adults in general. Sometimes we can also better prepare our neurologist appointments or visits to the hospital. But going back to education in general, now when you were talking before, I was wondering, like, what are the main challenges that children have with MS have in the school, like in the environment, not only on the educational side, but in the social life inside the school?
There's definitely a lot of challenges socially. I know some of the challenges that I faced personally was that I wasn't in school as much as I wanted to be. And so my friendships kind of fell away. My friends did not understand the challenges that I was facing. And I started getting bullied because of the challenges that I was facing. And as I learned how to advocate for myself and how to stand up for myself, those bullies started to kind of catch on and go away. But it didn't disappear. I know that. And I think the thing that helped me the most was being able to connect with another teenager who had been diagnosed with MS and knowing that she was facing all the same things that I was experiencing. And that loneliness went away because I had somebody who truly understood. I still, to this day, I don't keep in contact with my friends from high school. They weren't there at a time that I needed them, but I do keep in contact with the friends that I've made who have been diagnosed with MS because they were my real friends. They really understood. They supported me. We supported each other. And just having, you know, we keep coming back to that community, but having that community, it was really the thing that helped me socially the most.
Community is always there and it's really helpful. And when I was diagnosed with MS, I was a bit older. I was 23, but I always used to think that MS was like thinking about friendships, that MS was a gift from life because I had this natural filter to see who was worthy to spend time with. I mean, time is limited, so we have to balance with whom we are spending time. So in the beginning, I used to think like this, like it will put the right people in my life. So yeah, children, I feel children can be really cruel sometimes.
I call it a twisted blessing. It's a blessing, but it's also, you know, there's sometimes it's like, do I really want this? But most of the time, you just look for the good.
We always need to try to see the positive side. Of course, there's many things that are not positive, that's for sure. But thinking about positiveness, I think that one for real. And what about you, Eleanor? How was your experience in the school?
So I found I struggled with understanding, why can I not do what my friends are doing? Why can my friends go out to a party, then to another party the day after, then go out the day after that, and then I can't go to school on Monday? Like, why can't I do the same thing that other 15-year-olds could do? But in a way, my parents just let me do what I needed to do to help me realise in my own time that it is a bit rubbish, that I can't do what other people my age can do. But if I plan ahead, so I'm doing something next weekend, I know that during the week I need to not push myself, so I can do. And it's also choosing what you'd rather do. And like you said, like choosing who you want to spend your time with, because if that one time going out is very, very, very tiring, just from going out once, it can knock you back for the rest of the weekend. And it's just like listening to your body. And in school, I had supportive friends. I'm not friends with any of them now. I'm friends with one person who, throughout all of the journey, she would visit me in hospital. Like, she was so supportive. But I'm not friends with the others. I've found that I really found my true friends at uni, because I understood myself more. So I could say to people, hi, nice to meet you, I've got MS, so if my MS flares up, I will be going home. If I'm rude, I apologize, I'm just tired, I need to go home. Whereas I felt like in school, people would tell you that you're rude and all these things, but actually your social battery's gone, you're overwhelmed, your body's hurting, and it's actually, I don't know how to express myself. Whereas now, I go into, when I meet new people, I tell them before, so then when it does happen, they're like, right, let's get you home. And now I feel like I've got the best support system I have now, and it's kind of giving that support system to young children's friends as well, not just the child with the MS, but also their friends, their family and friends, to make them feel more comfortable to socialize.
We often talk about the understanding of others, and it's even more difficult when it's children. If they are not aware, if they are not educated, if they don't know there are some differences. And this is something that maybe we should raise more awareness in the different work that we're doing, advocacy and the different movements that we are part of, to make sure that those places where children grow up, there is awareness of what are those conditions, that there is more and more awareness about disability, but also about chronic conditions and the impact of it. And to normalize the different symptoms would be a really great step to do, but it's an ideal ambition to be able to educate everyone, but that's something that we probably will have to keep pushing for. I'm really happy when I see people like you, Elena, or you, Emily, that have been involved in the advocacy movement also, to be able to be the voice of the children or the teens with MS and express those needs and those recommendations to make sure that we can bring change in the different systems that we are dealing with. And I think, in a way, the school system we've addressed now in this discussion, but there are other topics that we should also, like the socialization of the kids is not just into the school. There are also other places where they meet and then experience different life experiences. And we will probably need more and more podcasts to discuss all the very other places where. But what would you say is the greatest impact of the kids coming to the activities that you're doing, like the camp, the retreats, or the when you are gathering the kids together? What's the first benefits that they get from these gatherings?
One of the biggest benefits that I see, or the biggest transformations that I see of the teenagers that come to our programs, is their whole perspective on their diagnosis. The first night of camp, I ask all the campers, we sit in a circle and I write down their words, but I ask them, if you could describe your diagnosis in one word, what would you say? And the words that they often use are lonely, stupid, confusing, disability, difficult, not my friend. They use all sorts of negative words when they first arrive. And then we kind of put that aside and we continue on with our camp program. We do all sorts of really fun activities like rock climbing and painting pottery and fishing and kayaking and yoga. And we do all these activities, and a lot of them throughout the week, they realize how much they can do that they've been told that they can't do anymore. But then we also throw in the MS education, where they're learning more about their diagnosis and they're understanding that they aren't alone, that the symptoms that they experience are also experienced by other teenagers. And we have an MS expert who comes in and answers those medical questions that maybe the teenagers are afraid to ask their own doctor, sometimes because mom is in the room and they don't want to ask because mom is there. And on the last night of camp, I asked the same campers, if you were to describe your diagnosis in one word, what would you say? And the words that they choose at that point are strength, friendship, community, ability, not stopping me. And all of their words have completely shifted and their whole perspective has changed just in a matter of a few days after receiving that education in that community.
Well, that's very beautiful. Thank you very much for this, Emily. And same for you, Eleanor, from your experience. And if you have one recommendation to give to young people that are going through a newly diagnosed phase that can feel this loneliness and lack of support or being confused, what would you recommend? And where do you think they can find peer support to support them better?
So for me, it was, like I say, support and talking. So understanding why your body is doing this, why your body is doing what it's doing. And just from understanding, you can then kind of understand yourself. And it's kind of just speaking out, speaking to people, even if people don't have a clue what MS is, educating people on it, because then you're also learning yourself. I find that a lot of people go, you're too young to have MS, or I've never heard of it. And it's, no, I'm not too young. I've actually started diagnosing people early, which is a positive. And MS is this, oh, okay. And then a lot of people actually understand, and it's also helps you feel supported and understood. I find that if I am in an environment full of new people, but everyone knows what I've got MS, and everyone knows that at some point I might end up having to leave because I am tired, that makes me feel more comfortable. So just talk out. And if someone judges, it's their issue, not yours. Like, you are in pain. If they are finding it rude or finding it that you're just being a bit weird, that is their issue, not mine. I found at uni, especially, I used to meet a lot of people on nights out, just friends of friends, and like got to know them. And I'd always just say, hi, I've got MS. So this is this. Then we'd have a good night. If my MS flared up, I went home. No judgment. They'd all message me the next day being like, are you okay, kind of thing. And it's just having that feel that you're comfortable within yourself and comfortable in your surroundings actually pushes you to do things. I, when I got diagnosed, thought I wouldn't go to uni. I thought I wouldn't go to festivals. I thought I wouldn't go travel in the world with my friends and like my family. I've been to festivals on my own. I've gone to uni. I moved out and I did not think I'd do all them things. And the reason I did that is because I was so confident in myself and in my disability that if it's there, if some people are judging, it's their issue, not mine.
Thank you for this and the very strong words, I think. And yes, it's their issues. It's in their eyes and it's not the reality. So we have to replace the perspective in the right way to make sure that we can support them, also to educate them in a way. But one message that's coming up is the loneliness and the support that is needed from the people around you. And I think that's something that we keep hearing in those podcasts. I don't know if you heard the other episode. And we had people with Anemo and Mogad that were also saying the same things. You are not alone. You have to know that you're not alone. The message out there for everyone is like, try to find the peers to discuss, to share, to grow together, but also know that your strength is with communication and with the community around you so you can find support. So it's really important that, and I hope that our listeners are there to also share those words that you are not alone and that we can, as a community, support each other more and more in the future and help educate all our systems. As I was saying, it's not just the education system. But given that we have a limited time, I will give the floor back to Anna because she has a little closing gift she prepared for you guys. But thank you very much for being here with us. And I hope that we will continue this discussion and have more podcasts about the pediatric MS because this is the topic topic that needs to be spoken about and more awareness is needed.
Now we are arriving to the end of our episode, but before we will do a fun rapid fire round. You have to answer the question with the first thing that pops up in your mind, okay? So first one, dogs or cats?
Dogs.
Dogs.
I also prefer dogs. I have a dog's wife. Books or films?
Films.
Audiobooks.
Cool. Interesting answer. And you, Elizabeth?
Books.
Good. Netflix or YouTube?
YouTube.
Netflix.
Netflix.
I also prefer YouTube, but everything to it. An advice to parents of children that have been recently diagnosed?
Just support. Just don't judge and listen is the biggest thing. They know best. Listen.
Find your community and be that support for your family, but find the support for yourself as well.
I will just add one point. Maybe it's just for the parents, so just pace yourself. I mean, it's going to be a long journey and they really have to pace themselves and take care also of themselves while they're taking care of their kids.
Well, unfortunately, we have arrived to the end of the episode. It was a really, really nice conversation and a big thank you to both of you for joining the conversation and for sharing your invaluable insights and experiences with us. So as we wrap up today's episode of Let's Talk MS, we want to send our best wishes to all the kids, families, caregivers, and educators out there. May this school year and this chapter of life be filled with strength, joy, learning, and connection. No matter what challenges come your way, remember, you are not alone in this journey. As we talked before, the community is out there. So here's to a year full of growth, hope, and special moments. This discussion has introduced us the challenges of children and their families when MS arrives at the early stage of their life. You can find relevant sources in the links in the description of the episode. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. And share this one with someone who would love it. If you want more insights, you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at EUMSYouth. Thank you for listening our episode today. Until next time, bye!